5-star reviews on Google, and an A+ with the Better Business Bureau.
You don't need to be afraid of the IRS any longer. End your tax.
As I sit here in this studio tonight, here at 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports, here in our Odyssey network of stations here, I'm reminded of a quote by Isoroku Yamamoto, who in 1940 said, "I fear all we have done is to awaken a sleeping giant and fill him with a terrible resolve." That was, he wrote the quote, and then it was used shortly thereafter following the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. And I'm sort of understanding a little bit of what that comment references by this mention of a nickname for myself. I have awoken a sleeping giant in the text line here, Jacob. Things are bubbling out of control here. Now I am receiving nickname recommendations. Earlier in the show, somebody said to, referred to me as L-Dub. And I'm like, oh, I kind of like the way that that sounds, you know, kind of come up with a nickname of sorts. Like everybody has it. I don't want to just be known as Logan till the end of time, which is fine. It's my government name. I get it. But like, you know, Carrington is C-Dot. Nobody calls Alex by his first name. That's Gold. It's Cody and Gold, right? I mean, I guess Cody goes by his first name. Fesco goes by his last name. Dusty goes, you know, it's like, I don't know. I just feel like, you know, kind of have a little something there. You know, Dusty's such a unique first name. So now I'm like, I like L-Dub. That's kind of an interesting one. You know, I'd like a nickname of sorts. So refer to me as L-Dub for now. Well, the listeners have taken it upon themselves to begin handing out recommendations. Somebody says go with Low Web instead of L-Dub. Okay. Okay. Big W, or pronounced Big Dub. I like it. Unfortunately, I'm 5'9" and I weigh 150 pounds. Big has never been in reference to myself at any real point in my existence. So I appreciate it. I don't know how hard that one hits. That one could probably be reserved for my younger brother. I am 5'9". My sister's 5'5". My mom is 5'5". My dad's 5'10". And my brother Coleman, who's 3 years younger than me, is 6'3". Don't ask me about it. I don't want to get into it. It still pisses me off. I don't know why he's that much bigger than everybody else. Even the milkman jokes aren't funny to me. It just irritates me that he's that much taller than the rest of our family. But that's beside the point. Somebody else in the text line in 913 says, "After hours with L-Dub and the Colonel. It's way better than whatever the hell your real names are." Should we take it? Should we run with it, Jacob? What are you thinking? All right. He gives me the thumbs up. I like it. Dusty's nickname is the Dirty Werewolf. I'll take your word for it, and I don't want to know what the story behind that is. Somebody else said, "I'm going to start calling you W." I've gotten that one before. My basketball coach used to call me Webby growing up. I had a coach in high school call me Little Larry all the time after my dad, because I grew up in the same town my parents grew up in, so everybody knew my parents. So inadvertently, everybody knew me, and a bunch of my teachers also taught and coached my parents. So my dad's name is Lawrence, or Larry. Everybody calls him Duff. That's a story for another day. So everybody, my entire childhood, because I look so much like my dad, called me Little Larry. Used to drive me friggin' crazy, dude. Somebody said, "Go as the logo." I think that's reserved for Jerry West. But I like it. Logo, Logan, I got it. I like it. "Nobody has to know you're my size, bro. Go with Big Dub." yeah, I kind of exposed myself. It is what it is. All right, let's get back into the thick of things here with our sports on tonight's program. We spent a lot of hour number one talking about mock drafts, the Geno Smith trade to the Raiders, the Seahawks' interest in signing Sam Darnold off the free agent market, my personal belief that the Chiefs should make a run at Jonathan Allen now that he's been released by the Commanders, if it is within reason, and by that I mean monetarily, if it's within reason. More news, though, coming out, right? I mentioned a mock draft that had the Chiefs trading up to number 8 to take Armon Membo, trading up with the Carolina Panthers. And that got a lot of reaction from some folks. Somebody said, that type of move to get Membo sounds great, but it's going to cost more than you think. Probably will cost us 2 first-round picks. Think of what it cost us to move up and take Mahomes, right? Chiefs traded up from 27 to 10 in that draft in 2017 to pick up Patrick Mahomes. Now you're trading up from 31 to 8 in that scenario. So you're trading from further away, further up. You're, instead of 17 picks up, you're trading 23 picks up.
Yes, but the talent level is my counter argument to that. That draft class, it was held a little bit more above this one. And so I don't think there's as much talent. I mean, it's very top loaded, I would say, but, you know, kind of down the board, you know, I think that 2018 class, right? Was that 2017, 18?
That was 17. And I think in that situation, right, the Bills, if they hadn't traded that pick, they were going to take a quarterback. So they were trading away a quarterback prospect, in a sense, to a team that was trading up for a quarterback prospect. And I think that increased the value on both ends, right? Not the case this time around. The Chiefs are not trading up for a quarterback. The Bills would not be trading away a quarterback. They wouldn't necessarily be trading away a tackle either. So I don't know. I think that's an interesting one. And the Panthers are in a situation where they are not a piece or two away from being a winning organization. They need all the help they can get. Maybe you can finagle something. I don't know. And we've seen how much the trade market has shifted in the NFL just in the last 8 years, for sure. But I don't entirely disagree with that statement, though, that I said a first, a third, and a sixth or seventh round pick next year. I think you would be thrilled if that was the deal you got. And you said as much, right? Maybe I was being a little bit too conservative in my approach there. Maybe it's a first, a second, and a fifth next year. I don't know, right? Maybe you have to trade away 31, 63, and then a fourth or a fifth round pick next year. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. I think it's going to take a lot for the Chiefs.
Do the Chiefs have any inks in the future year? Do we know that? Because those draft picks are probably going to be sought after more than the Chiefs draft pick. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I mean, I don't think they've got one for next year. I mean, they've got the Titans pick this year, but that's early round 3. I think that's the pick at 65 or 66 that they got there. So, no, I don't think they've got anything in the sense of like future picks that they can evaluate. I don't know. It's an interesting one. Somebody was mentioning the arm length point that Chris Unocero made on the show earlier this week. He said it's such a cliche point. Jake Matthews, Penei Sewell, Rashawn Slater all have sub 34 inch arms, and those dudes are all stud at left tackle. Penei Sewell plays right tackle, I believe, for the Lions, but the point still stands. He's an excellent right tackle. Rashawn Slater and Jake Matthews both play left tackle, and Rashawn Slater is a phenomenal left tackle. So I don't disagree with that point. I was just, you know, reiterating what Chris had said earlier this week, that when you do have shorter arms, you got to have a certain level of explosiveness and athleticism. And I think Armon Membo proved that at the combine, that despite having a little bit shorter arms, he's got explosiveness, man. That 40 time was ridiculous. His vertical leap, his broad jump, he's got the type of athleticism where, yeah, my arms are a half inch shorter than what you'd typically want out of a left tackle, but I can get through my kick steps and get into my spot on the field. I can get into my stance. I can get into a point of contact much quicker than you would typically anticipate from a tackle. So your athleticism can make up for some of those shortcomings. So I don't disagree. Again, I just think that it's a bit gutsy to move up to number 8 and give up the amount of draft capital that it would take. Could they do it? Yeah, certainly. I think they could. Will they? Man, I don't know. Somebody said, I love the idea of going after Membo, but he's a right tackle that we'd be moving to the left tackle spot again. Remember how that worked out for Kingsley. And I think that it's a slightly different situation because Kingsley is a brute. Big body dude, phenomenal bench press numbers, but he didn't wow you with his explosiveness. His 40 time, his vertical leap, his broad jump didn't wow you the way that Armand Membos has, at least not through the combine. So I think they're different players in a sense, but I get the point of like right tackle to left tackle and trying to make that work again. Who knows? But I think Membo, more so than Kingsley, more athletic and gives you more of a level of confidence that he can make it work. Somebody said Taylor could go to left tackle. I'd rather put Membo there, to be honest. That's just my thought on it. But yes, you certainly could move Juwan Taylor to a left tackle. Certainly makes it a little bit easier to swallow $20 million a year if the guy's playing left tackle instead of right tackle. You're still paying him $20 million. And I'd rather put him in the position he's most comfortable in because he's been a part of the offense for so long.
Also, they would probably be interested in that fourth round pick that they got from the Bears. One of the comments.
Oh, that's right. That's right. They did just get that. I forgot that was for next year. That fourth rounder from the Bears. That's correct. That is absolutely right. Doesn't matter if it's a cliche or not. That's how GMs draft. Yeah. Good point. But again, drafting is not a perfect science. GMs get it wrong. GMs oozed over John Ross. That didn't work. They oozed over Mitch Trubisky. That didn't work. You know, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance. Thornton. Yeah, Tyquan Thornton, which, I mean, yeah, the jury's probably
it's
not
gone.
Out. Yeah, the jury has deliberated and come to a decision on that one. I don't think the jury's
Nikhil
still
Harry.
Out there. Yeah, Nikhil Harry was a tough one. There's big ones there. I'd rather put me at left tackle than Juwan Taylor, somebody in the text line said. Man, what kind of stat? What's your arm length, huh? What's your 40 time? Let me see it. I'll give it a shot. I'm willing to try anything at this point. You don't move up that high to take a right tackle / right guard. Also would agree.
But if unless your plan is to play him at left.
Unless you are overly confident that he can do it. Are you overly confident that Armand Membo can play left tackle? It's a risk that you're taking regardless. Is it worth the risk? I mean, the last time they traded up into the top 10, it worked out pretty well. I don't know. Maybe Armand Membo becomes the Patrick Mahomes of left tackles. We can only hope. If that were to come to fruition, if the Chiefs were to somehow trade up and grab him, I don't know.
Are you taking Membo over Will Campbell or?
Based on the combine performance a little bit, yeah. Will Campbell was a bit disappointing, especially going through the blocking drills. Kept slip sliding all over the place. Couldn't keep his foot. Yeah, I would lean towards Armand Membo might be the best tackle in this draft. But I think it's a lower than normal tackle draft. That's just my opinion. 913-586-7965. We'll talk about some of these other NFL storylines that are coming out around the league on the other side of the break here. After hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber, name to be announced later, nickname to be announced later, alongside Jacob Colonel Mustard right here on 96.5 The Fan. Day when the NFL has a lot of information coming out, which is pretty much every day. I mean, it is a league that never sleeps. We talked about the Bengals allowing Trey Hendrickson to seek a trade. We talked about the Commanders cutting Jonathan Allen and how I believe the Chiefs should at least kick the tires on it. See what it looks like. You know, how much does he want? You know, what's the length of the deal? What can you make work as a winning organization? See if you could bring in a guy like Jonathan Allen to pair with Chris Jones on the interior. We talked about Geno Smith getting traded to the Raiders. The Seahawks showing a great deal of interest in signing Sam Darnold. Them cutting Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf requesting a trade. We talked a little bit about Joe Tooney and the trade to the Chicago Bears. Of course, we didn't have live shows yesterday or Wednesday to really talk about it. But, you know, I wasn't... It was a strange thing. Like, I wasn't shocked to see it happen, but I was a little bit surprised because there was really no indication of it. Like, there was no, like, hey, the Chiefs may try to shop Joe Tooney. I thought the deal made sense. Wish they could have got a little bit more out of it, but that's the nature of the beast in the NFL today with the trade market. And with the the franchise tagging of Trey Smith and the likelihood of a long-term extension, the deal made some sense. And now you save a little bit of money to try to put more into Trey Smith and see what you can make work outside of that. What we haven't had a chance to really get to is the Cleveland Browns going full Cleveland Browns. Of course, a couple of weeks ago, Myles Garrett requested a trade from Cleveland. Earlier this week, Myles Garrett, who had requested the trade, requested to have a meeting with Cleveland Browns owner Jimmy Haslam. Now, the situation kind of revolves around the fact that Garrett wants out and Haslam doesn't want him to go. So rather than have a meeting and try to discuss it and get through the nitty gritty and the details of it and try to come to a decision, right? For Jimmy Haslam to say his piece and try to convince Myles Garrett to stick around, and for Myles Garrett to say his piece and try to convince Jimmy Haslam to trade him, Haslam doesn't want to hear it. NFL Network reported that Haslam declined Garrett's request to meet and directed him to speak instead with the general manager, Andrew Berry, who oversees football operations. Both sides are very set in their ways. The Browns say that they are not going to search for a trade partner. They're not going to allow Myles Garrett to search for a trade partner. And Myles Garrett says, I'm not playing for the Browns anymore. So now what? Now what, Jimmy Haslam? He's got you. Like, the Browns can say, and they could try to dig their heels in and puff their chest out and say all they want. Oh, you know, you're not in control here. Myles Garrett has got you by your you-know-whats right now. You have no power in this situation. Myles Garrett holds all the cards. He is the only good football player on your football team. Your offense is terrible. You don't have a quarterback. I mean, you got Jerry Jeudy. Okay. Jerry Judy's there. Nick Chubb, if he ever gets healthy again, solid player. That's about it. Come on, man. He wants out. Trade him and try to get something back. Instead, you're just going to let him sit and fester on it the whole year? He doesn't want to play for your organization because it's a dumpster fire.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. It's a dumpster fire. You're already dealing with the Deshaun Watson contract whole issue, and now you're having a disgruntled locker room. Like, it's bad, and he wants out. And if I'm being honest, some injury concerns, we kind of talked about it, but Abdul Carter, if he's right there in the draft for you, I mean, there's your shot at another Myles Garrett.
I mean, he's been in Cleveland for 8 years. They've made the playoffs twice. I don't know if they've won a playoff game in those two tries.
They did against the Steelers and Big Ben.
Oh, that's right, because then the Chiefs beat them in that divisional round.
Yeah, with that's correct. The backup.
With the backup quarterback.
Oh, what was
it? Matt Moore.
Yep.
That's right. So you've made the playoffs twice. You've won a playoff game. In the midst of that, Myles Garrett's rookie year, you went 0-16, and then this past year, you go 3-14. He's been your best player. He is, without a doubt, one of the top three edge rushers in the National Football League. He's given everything he has to your organization, and yet at every step along the way, you have expressed very little in terms of your willingness, desire, and passion to win. You had a semi-decent, competent quarterback in Baker Mayfield that you ran into the dirt, let walk for peanuts, and now he's a $100 million man playing good football for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You give a massive deal, fully guaranteed, to Deshaun Watson in the midst of some fairly serious off-the-field allegations. And now he's torn his Achilles twice. You're not playing winning football. You're not a winning ownership. And we've seen this across sports. And Bob Fesco this morning on Fesco and Dusty said it perfectly. It starts with the ownership. If the ownership is a cesspool, it poisons everything underneath it. And we've seen that across professional sports. I know everybody loves Michael Jordan, but the Hornets have been really bad for a really long time. You've had coaches, you've had players go in and out that door as if it was a revolving door under, you know, at the base of an escalator. The ownership has stayed the same, and they still don't win. The Washington organization, back to their time as the Redskins and then as the Washington football team and now as the Commanders, they were terrible for years and years and years and years. And you had great players go through that organization. You had great coaches go through that organization, and you couldn't win. What was the common denominator? Dan Snyder. The Carolina Panthers are going through a similar situation right now, in my view. That's what the Browns are dealing with right now. It's bad ownership. And it is trickling its way down and poisoning everything underneath it. Football operations, presidents, CFOs, general managers, down to the coaching staff, and then ultimately down to the players who have to bear the biggest brunt of your ineptitude. You don't have any cards here, man. You do not have a leg to stand on. Jimmy Haslam, he has got, Myles Garrett has all the power and influence in this situation. Trade him. See what you can get back. Losing Myles Garrett or keeping Myles Garrett is not going to be the difference between you making a playoff game, making the playoffs and being a 4-win football team. It's not. Myles Garrett is a phenomenal player. And on a good football team, Myles Garrett can take you from a 10 or 11 win squad to maybe a 12 or a 13 win squad. If you're a 4-win football team, he's not going to bring you to 6 or 7 wins. You're still going to be a 4-win football team because you can't score. Your offense is in, it's below the dumpster. I don't even know why. I mean, it's in the sewer, buried hundreds of feet underground. It's disgusting. And Jimmy Haslam is being your typical billionaire owner and standing on, well, I sign the checks and I do that. Shut up, dude. You're a bad owner. You're a bad owner. Just admit that you're a bad owner and let this future Hall of Fame football player try to win elsewhere after he just tried his damnedest for 8 years to make your organization in the smallest way presentable. But you gave him no help. You did nothing. Most consequential thing you did was give a very controversial Deshaun Watson $160 million guaranteed. No, it was more than that, wasn't it? Let me see.
It was like 240 or 260.
I'm trying to remember. 230. 5 years, $230 million, fully guaranteed to Deshaun Watson. Oh, and you wonder why Myles Garrett wants out. Well, it's interesting. 913-586-7965 is our number. Had to get that one off my chest, get off my soapbox there a little bit. And again, shout out to Bob Fesco this morning on Fesco and Dusty, who did a really good job of describing that. And like I said, talking about ownership. And if the ownership is bad, then it just sucks the life out of everything that exists underneath it. When it's supposed to lift it up, it's supposed to breathe life into the rest of the organization, and it hasn't done that. Of course, big news out of the AFC West this week, on top of the fact that Geno Smith just got traded to the Raiders tonight, the Chargers cut ties with Joey Bosa, which that's been talked about for not just weeks, but months. I mean, that was a discussion during the season that the Chargers were likely going to cut Joey Bosa with all the injury issues and how much money he was being, you know, how much money was due to him. Chargers are going to have to decide what they want to do with Khalil Mack this offseason because he's a free agent and he's coming off a really good career resurgent year. And they've got other needs. They got to find out what they're going to do at running back. They got to get extra wide receivers. So I was not surprised to see that move. What the market for Joey Bosa looks like is going to be fascinating. And before you say it out loud, no, I don't think the Chiefs are going to get Joey Bosa. I don't think they're going to make a run at him. I don't think Joey Bosa is even going to consider it. The Bosa brothers despise the Kansas City Chiefs with such a fervent level of just disdain. It's unbelievable. He's not coming. Guy you might be able to kick the tires on, gauge interest on, Harold Landry of the Tennessee Titans. He got cut today after pretty good career so far in the NFL. He was the Titans leader in sacks this past season with 9. He had 10.5 sacks in 2023. In 2021, he had 12 sacks. He didn't play in the 2022 season because of a torn ACL, but in 6 years in the National Football League, he's got 50.5 sacks. So he's averaging over 9 sacks or close to 9 sacks per season so far in his NFL career. He is definitely more of like a Dee Ford, Frank Clark type. He is at his best fit. He's a 3-4 outside linebacker, edge rusher. He's listed at 6'2", 252. So, but he has shown an ability and a willingness to play on the edge and stop the run. He has, in 5 straight seasons, not including that 2022 season he didn't play, he's got 5 straight years of double-digit tackles for loss, and he's had at least 68 combined tackles in all 5 of those seasons. Willing and able tackler, in the gaps, behind the line of scrimmage, and he gets to the quarterback. Like I said, more of a Frank Clark type, but I like the fit of it. If he's your D-end on one side of the football, you've got Chris Jones, and in a perfect world, Jonathan Allen. I don't think you could afford both, but say you can. And you've got George Karlaftis on the other side. That's a Super Bowl defensive line. That is a defensive line that should terrify opposing teams. Chris Jones and Jonathan Allen on the interior, good luck running the football. And then you drop back to pass, and you've got Chris Jones, who is as talented at getting to the quarterback as anybody in the league today, with sheer power, quickness. He's got great hands at the point of attack. Jonathan Allen is a road grader, and he's got a great job. He does a great job of extending himself and getting off blocks. Harold Landry is your speed rusher. And then you've got George Karlaftis, who's sort of a power rusher, club rusher, off the other edge. It would be fun to watch. That defensive line would be fun to watch. And then you've got depth pieces like Felix Anudike Uzama, and if you wanted to bring back Mike Pinnell and maybe Turk Wharton. Be fun to watch. Is it likely? No. Is it almost impossible? Yes. Almost, but not completely. 913-586-7965. More to come, including some college basketball news and breaking it down, giving you some of the details of the fact that my wife and I are officially first-time homeowners. All that's coming up right here on After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard, your home for Kansas City sports. Some folks should really, at times, keep their opinions to themselves. I'm not saying everybody. And I mean, you got a First Amendment right to say the things you want to say. But I have the First Amendment right to tell you when you sound like an idiot. And you know who sounds like an idiot? Deion Dawkins of the Buffalo Bills. Earlier this week, Deion Dawkins was talking about the season and got on the subject of, he was on Ryan Clark's podcast, and he was talking about the Super Bowl and the Chiefs' loss, of course, to the Eagles, 40-22. And during his time on the podcast, Deion Dawkins said that the Bills would have had, quote, a better chance, unquote, at winning the Super Bowl. In fact, he later went on to say that the Bills would have, quote, we would have put on a better show in the Super Bowl, unquote. Oh, would you have? Would you have put on a better show in the Super Bowl, Deion? That's great. I'm so glad to hear that. But why didn't you get to the Super Bowl? Like, if you were so much better than the Chiefs and you would have, you know, had a better chance at winning that Super Bowl against Philly, how did you not get there? Like, how did you not, like, how did the Chiefs end up in the Super Bowl and not the Bills? If you guys were so much better than the Chiefs and you would have had such a, you know, higher chance of winning and you would have, quote, put on a better show in the Super Bowl than the Chiefs, how come you didn't get there? Oh, that's right. Because the Chiefs own you, fraud. All you do is yap on social media. Maybe help Josh Allen win a damn football game. Maybe don't go full-blown Buffalo Bills and lose four straight games in the biggest moments of your franchise's life in the last 30 years. Oh my God, how tone-deaf and stupid does that sound? We would have put on a better show than the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. Then beat the Chiefs, damn! You sound ridiculous. You sound so incredibly moronic when you say that. Now, I'm a Chiefs fan, so admittedly, I think it's dumb. Jacob, you're not a Chiefs fan. What do you make of Deion Dawkins' comments?
I mean, it's salty, but, like, it didn't work. Oh, sorry. It didn't work out this way, but, you know, the Rockets fans kind of said that about the Warriors when they were facing each other in the Western Conference Finals, when it was like, hey, the winner of this is going to be the eventual winner of the NBA championship. It didn't work out like that, but I guess that's kind of what was going through their mind, or at least could be something. I still don't think he should say that, because you're right. It's not like he's a former retired Bill. He's still currently on their roster, and they beat the Chiefs during the regular season. Congrats. But you haven't done it in the postseason. There's just no success.
Yeah, and like, it's one thing if you lose in the AFC Championship game this year and the Chiefs get to the Super Bowl and they blow out the Eagles. If you were 3-1 against the Chiefs in the last four playoff games, you can't beat the Chiefs in the playoffs. So if you can't beat them, don't sit there and say, oh, well, you know, they got us this time, but if we would have gotten there, we would have stood a better chance than them. No. Even if you're right, even if it is a true statement that the Bills would have had a better chance to beat the Eagles, which I don't believe is true, but even if it was true, you still sound dumb. Because you couldn't beat the Chiefs in the first place. So you don't get to say, we would have had a better chance to win. Your chances were zero because you couldn't even get to the damn Super Bowl.
And the other point, you kind of said you didn't believe it. I mean, I think the way their team was made up had a better chance to beat the Eagles with, you know, James Cook and Josh Allen being two running threats and keeping the ball away from Saquon Barkley and Jalen Hurts. Like, I understand his, like, thought process behind that. But you got to beat who's in front of you. You're coming out of the AFC. You have to worry about the AFC first. If you don't get past the AFC, you know, everybody wants to play in the Super Bowl. Only two teams can, and the others get to tweet about it.
Yeah, man. I mean, just like, talk about how you would have played better in the Super Bowl. Okay, do that. But get to one first. Beat the Chiefs and get to a Super Bowl first before you start running your mouth. Because that's all he does is run his mouth. And I actually agreed with him a couple of months ago because he was the one that was advocating for an offensive lineman of the year award in the National Football League, which I completely am on board for. I thought that that was a great point that he made. But then you say something like that. Like, dude, there's confidence and then there's delusion. This is delusion, Deion. Absolute unadulterated delusion on your part. And he's a great player and I wish I didn't have to dog him, but that's a ridiculous thing to say out loud. 913-586-7965. I saw a report yesterday, courtesy of Nate Taylor of The Athletic. We were talking about left tackle, and CBS Sports is coming up with this, you know, Chiefs trading up to 8 to draft Armand Membo. There's reports that the Chiefs are targeting Ronnie Stanley. And this was not only reported by, you know, ESPN and CBS. This was reported by the Ravens. The Ravens themselves reported this. Chiefs to reportedly target Ronnie Stanley if he hits the open market. That's the guy that they're looking at right now. Earlier this week, though, you know, like on Monday and Tuesday of this week, reports were that the Ravens were going to re-sign him. They were going to re-sign Ronnie Stanley to a long-term deal. As we sit here Friday night at 7:45, no such deal has occurred. They've got until Monday at 3 o'clock Central Time to get a deal done. Otherwise, free agency begins, and it's the Wild West. So I don't know. If Ronnie Stanley is available, that's what they're saying. When free agency begins, the Chiefs will target Ronnie Stanley, the 9-year veteran who is the best left tackle available on the market, according to sources. That according to, again, that was Nate Taylor of The Athletic who wrote that earlier this week. Wouldn't be the first time that the Chiefs went after a former Ravens left tackle. Of course, prior to Ronnie Stanley, it was Orlando Brown Jr. So who knows? After hours here on 96.5 The Fan, a lot more coming up here on tonight's program. Stick around. You're listening to 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. The boys are playing some ball. I know it's just spring training, but we had another good one today for the Kansas City Royals. Took down the Angels 8-2 in six innings. Had some weather issues taking place down there in Surprise, so they decided to call it after six frames. Royals scored two in the first, four in the fourth, and two more in the fifth. Bobby Witt Jr., 1-for-1, two-run bomb in the game. Vinny Pasquantino hit a long ball. Hunter Renfro went yard in this game. It was long ball city for the Royals in this one. Brian O'Keefe hit a homer as well. The 31-year-old former Seattle Mariner catcher, he hit a long ball. They even had a guy come in to play second base, Peyton Wilson, 25-year-old from Hoover, Alabama. I do not believe that his picture on ESPN, that does not appear to be Peyton Wilson. According to ESPN, Peyton Wilson is 25 years old. He's 5'9", 180 pounds from Hoover, Alabama. The picture of him on ESPN appears to be a man in his mid-50s. This is not a joke. Jacob, please look this up. Everybody else, look up Peyton Wilson, ESPN. Somebody tell me one way or the other if that is actually Peyton Wilson, because Peyton Wilson appears to be a retired father of three, according to ESPN. I don't think that's the same guy. Regardless, he played second. He hit a long ball for the Royals today. They had five homers as a team in this game. In terms of pitching, Seth Lugo went 2 2/3, struck out five. He gave up just one earned run. Simonelli gave up an earned run as well. Those are the only two. Schreiber pitched a scoreless frame. Hunter Harvey and Angel Zerpa, all three of them pitched scoreless innings, giving up just one hit, five combined Ks. Royals are now 9-4 in spring training. Jonathan India has been showing off the glove the last couple of days. He had a great, great full extension catch at second base last night. And today didn't hit the ball. I mean, he was got on base twice via walks and scored a run in this game on that Bobby Witt Jr. home run, that two-run shot. I'm excited. I've been impressed with what I've seen out of the Royals thus far. Again, you know, I was listening again, like I said earlier, I was listening to Fesco and Dusty this morning, and they had Vern on, and they were trying to once again temper the expectations on Jack Caglione. Because, of course, he hit another big bomb earlier this week, and everybody's like, oh, look at him. Look at that swing. It's so smooth. It's an elite swing. He's got effortless power, and I am all the way in with you on it. He's not going to be on the major league roster this year, folks. And for them, I know most people are understand that, and they're fine with it. Even you know, celebrating it a little bit, and I'm one of those that's celebrating it. But there are those people out there that are like, man, I don't know how much longer they can keep him down. Why rush him? Like, why? We're not. There's no reason to rush Jack Caglione right now. He still has never played right field before. He has to learn to play right field. You're not going to give him 60 games in AAA and AA and then call him up to the show and say, hey, you've had 3 months, 2 months figuring out how to play right field. Go for it. It took MJ Melendez a year and a half to learn how to play left. And he's not as athletic as MJ. He's going to need some time. I think the earliest, the absolute earliest that we could see him is maybe opening day of next year. And I think that depends on what happens with Salvi. Because right now, Salvi can catch, he can play DH, and he can play first base. Vinny can play first base, and he can DH. Michael Massey is going to DH some this year because he can't play in the field every day. Not with the back issues that he's dealt with over the course of his career. So where is the opening for Jack Caglione? If you've already got Salvi and Vinny splitting first base duties, do you really want to call up Jack Caglione to start 30 games? To get limited AB, to get 100 to 150 at-bats? What's the point there? Leave him in AA, leave him in AAA, give him an opportunity to get more confident in his swing, to learn how to play right more consistently. Because your hope is, best case scenario, say 2027, opening day 2 years from now, Jack Caglione is your starting right fielder 2 years from now. Vinny will be 29 years old, 30 years old. He'll be at first base. Best case scenario, Salvi and Freddie Fermin are still splitting catching duties. And honestly, Freddie Fermin is your catcher. Salvi can DH. And then on days where you want Salvi to, if Salvi wants to catch or play first, okay, put him in at catcher. Let Caglione go to DH. Or let Vinny go to DH. You know, Jack comes down, plays first base, and then you got somebody out there and right for a day. Whatever you want to do. There's no point in having him up this early. I understand people are excited about Jack Caglione, and you absolutely should be, because he's going to be an elite player when he gets here. I fully believe that. Don't rush him. There's a long history with the Royals of rushing guys that didn't need to be rushed, and it hasn't worked out. Look no further, and I'll go back to my time in Springfield. Because we covered the Royals, but we also covered the St. Louis Cardinals. Probably more so the Cardinals, because the Cardinals' AA affiliate was in Springfield. The Cardinals did a horrendous job with their prospects of calling them up too early. Mason Winn worked out last year, but I thought that they got to Dylan Carlson too early in his process. They got to Jordan Walker too early in his process, and I think it's completely stunted him. Especially because you called him up too early. You didn't give him any opportunity, right? You didn't let him get comfortable in any sense of the word. You sent him back down, killed his confidence, and then you call him back up, and he's just not the same player. I understand the desire to get a player of the talent level at the plate of Jack Caglione up as soon as possible. But you want to make sure that he's in the best frame of mind, the highest level of confidence that he can have, both as a hitter and as a fielder, before you make that move. And right now, there's just the fit of the organization, the fit of the roster doesn't make sense for it. So, and I know that's not most of you. Most of you are of the belief that you give Jack another year or two. I would lean more towards two. But for those that are of the belief that, like, he's too good to keep off the field in the show, I don't think so. Because it's just going to jam everything up. You got a traffic jam between Salvi and Vinny and Jack, between the DH position and first base. Just doesn't make any sense. 913-586-7965. More to come here. One more hour remaining of After Hours. Logan Weber here alongside Jacob Mustard. 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.